This podcast contains explicit material. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to Season 3 of The Joy of Text, a monthly podcast about Judaism and sexuality. I'm Rebecca Honig-Friedman. I'm a journalist, multimedia producer, and your new moderator for this season of the podcast. Coming up on this episode, we answer a listener question about which sexual acts are permitted between a husband and wife.
I think this might be one of the most important episodes because I think in the end this is a root of a lot of questions that people have.
Then we'll talk with the director of the hit YouTube series Soon By You, Leah Gottfried, about the challenges of being single in the Orthodox world.
It's like this in-between stage, and the longer that stage lasts, I think the more difficult it is.
And finally, we've got a new take on the final word.
You just have to hear a letter like that to understand how important this conversation is.
That's all coming up on The Joy of Text.
At Mays Health, we know that if you're having sexual problems, it can have a significant impact on your life and on your relationship. We also know that these problems are not all in your head, and it's important for you to know that pain, low libido, erection, or orgasm problems can all be successfully resolved. Mays is the only treatment center of its kind in the area, addressing both the physical and emotional sources of sexual difficulties. If you're a man or a woman experiencing sexual problems, please don't go another day feeling like there is no solution. Visit us at www.mayshealth.com.
Welcome to Season 3 of The Joy of Text. I am your new moderator for this season, Rebecca Honig-Friedman. And I am here, as usual, with Dr. Batsheva Marcus, Clinical Director at Mays Women's Health and President of JOFA, and Rabbi Dov Linzer, Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Chovavei Torah. So great to be here.
We're so happy to have you.
Yeah, welcome.
Not that we will miss Raimi very much, but you've been an amazing, amazing number two.
Well, thank you. I have big shoes to fill. So before we jump into our listener question, I just wanted to give a little plug. The Chatan and Kala teacher training program that you guys do is accepting applications now. So if anyone is interested, the deadline is December 1st, and you can go to chatankalateachers.org. I'll spell it. That's Chatankallah teachers. Hopefully you know how to spell that, .org, and find applications there.
We only do this program once every 3 years, so if you want to do it and you don't get your application for this year, you're going to have to wait another 3 years.
So later on in the episode, we're going to be interviewing Leah Gottfried from the very popular web series Soon By You. And we will also be introducing a new segment with your words. So that's all coming up. We'll start with a listener question. So today's question is about sex in marriage.
It's a really broad question.
Yeah.
But we liked it because it was broad.
Rabbi Linzer has said multiple times that whatever a man wants to do with his wife, he can do it. However, I learned in yeshiva that the Shulchan Aruch forbids acts that involve the spilling of seed, like oral sex, for example, as well as other activities, like a man looking at or kissing his wife's vagina. Could you expand on Rabbi Linzer's reasoning for contradicting the Shulchan Aruch?
I need to defend Rabbi Linzer.
Oh, thank you.
Because I have never heard him say that whatever a man wants to do with his wife, he can do. He has quoted a Gemara that said whatever a man wants to do with his wife, he could do. And on that basis, he then approaches different things. Okay, so I just needed to jump in.
What the question is pointing to is, I think, a common assumption people have that there are certain things that
are off-limits.
Awesome.
Sure, and we'll get to that. But I appreciate, Batsheva, you opening with that because, yes, the Talmud, as we've said many, many times, is androcentric, looks at everything through the man's perspective. So when the Talmud wants to say that all types of acts are permissible between husband and wife, it speaks about it from the man's perspective. And so the Talmud does say whatever a man wants to do with his wife, he may do. But yes, I don't, other than quoting the Talmud, I wouldn't frame it that way. But I really appreciate the question because it gives an opportunity to discuss, you know, these issues and why people are getting different messages. So it really starts with a passage in the Talmud in Nedarim, where on page 20, where the Talmud says that it starts with an opinion of the name of Yochanan ben Dehavai, who lists a number of activities that husband and wife can do that lead to the children that are conceived through those sexual acts as turning out with various issues. So he says that if a man, why do children turn out blind? Because the husband is looking at his wife's vagina during intercourse. Why do children turn out mute? Because he is the man is kissing his wife's vagina, actually uses a euphemism, that place during intercourse. Why do they turn out deaf? Because they're speaking inappropriate things during intercourse. And then the last one, and why do they turn out lame? Because they turn the table upside down, which is during intercourse, which is a fascinating phrase, which we'll get to. So this reflects two things. It reflects, first of all, a belief that was very widespread, which is that the way a child turns out has to do with what the couple is looking at, thinking, and doing at that moment of conception. But it's not enough to go from there and connect the dots and say, and therefore you would come to this conclusion, because it has to be based also on an assumption that those acts are problematic, right? Why don't children come out with being very articulate because the husbands kiss that place during intercourse, right? Why do they come out with great eyesight because the husbands look at that place during intercourse? It obviously starts with an assumption that these are wrong, problematic acts, and therefore it leads to some type of a problem. So the Gemara quotes this and starts with this, but then very soon after you hear the voice of Rabbi Yochanan, not Yochanan ben Davai. Yochanan ben Davai is a very minor figure. Rabbi Yochanan is one of the great rabbis in the Talmud, and he says very categorically, he says, you know, this is all the words of Yochanan ben Davai, but the halacha is not like that. The halacha is, and here's that phrase, whatever a man wants to do with his wife, he may do. Then it actually gives an interesting metaphor, which is disturbing. The metaphor is like, it's just like meat that you get from a butcher. If you want, you can eat it with salt, and if you want, you can roast it, and if you want, you can boil it, so a man can do whatever he wants with his wife.
Rabbi Linzer did not say a man can do anything he wants with his wife.
I am quoting the Talmud. I am quoting the Talmud. Thank you. So we should obviously
very subtle.
Can I know it's been discussed elsewhere on the podcast that the consent of the woman is necessary.
Yes, the Talmud is very explicit about that. That everything has to be with the wife's consent and agreement.
But the underlying point is that there's a much wider variety of what people are allowed to do than, and it's responding to that first one
exactly.
Where it specifically said oral sex, you know, looking at the vagina, all of those
exactly.
things.
He's basically saying none of these are issues. And what's really fascinating is that elsewhere we see that Rabbi Yochanan did buy into this science, that's quote marks I'm making, because he actually does believe that what you do during sex impacts the child. So he's not denying the science. What he's denying is the negative attitude towards these acts, that there's nothing wrong with these acts, and you should have, and the halacha does not put any restrictions around sexual activity between husband and wife. Now, another thing I want to say about the metaphor, and then we'll get to some of the halachic issues, because it obviously is a little disturbing. It makes the woman like, you know, a sex object to be enjoyed, and the husband is getting pleasure from her, and she's not, you know, obviously that can be a disturbing aspect of that metaphor. But here's a point that I think, a deeper point that's being made, is that, you know, sometimes we hear about certain sex acts, and they might, for some people, feel like, ooh, that's disgusting, you know? Oral sex, anal intercourse, ugh, that's disgusting, that's wrong. We associate our sense of disgust or repulsion with some objective sense that they're wrong. And what Rabbi Yochanan is saying is, he's saying, this is just a matter of taste. Like, some people like their meat raw, you know, steak tartare, right? You know, some people say, ugh, that's disgusting. Who would ever eat meat like that? But that doesn't make it wrong. That just means that it's not your taste. And he says, so the same is true about sexual activity, you know? Different people have different tastes. There's no judgment that should be attached to that. And I think, like, that is a message that can't be repeated often enough.
But so how do we get from that to the Shulchan Aruch, which actually...
How does that get to there being not... Why isn't everybody getting this message, right? You know, that everything is okay. So the reason is because, you know, for some Rishonim, it starts with the Ravid, and I won't go through all the details, but, you know, they did not identify with this conclusion of the Gemara, and they actually felt that there were things wrong with certain acts, and they tried to limit the scope of what Rabbi Yochanan was saying.
I think that often there's something very scary to people about sexual activities with which they're not comfortable. Right. I think that's fundamental. You made reference to it a little bit earlier, right. But I think that gets the heart of a lot of things. Like, we inherently feel like, oh, this sex act is okay, but this sex act is not okay.
Right.
And some of that is shaped by, you know, popular culture and movies and books. But the reality is that none of us really know where erotic maps get shaped, this concept of an erotic map and how those get shaped. And there's theories about it, like, you know, guys who have this thing about high heels and, you know, there's thoughts that when they were a little baby, they were crawling around on the floor and their penis is getting touched by the floor and they're mother or whatever goes by in high heels. Uh-huh. And so they connect the high heels with the stimulation that they're feeling. We don't understand where erotic maps get built, but they're there, and they're just so different from each person. And so this idea that people think that they know inherently what's a good sex and what's bad sex and what's okay sex is really very problematic. And you made reference to it, but I just wanted to reiterate it.
No, that's perfect. And it's perfect to get into, you know, why the Rishonim, again, it starts with Ravid, like push back on this. And one reason is might be exactly that, like, you know, a clear sense of this is right and good and this is wrong. And also, it, I think, can come from a religious attitude that, listen, sex is only supposed to be about procreation. Anything more is just about indulging your sense, you know, your sensual pleasures, and therefore there's something intrinsically problematic about that. So we've got to limit it. So the Ravid basically tries to really limit the Gemara and say, we're talking about, now the one thing that for a lot of people might be something that they find the most disturbing, anal intercourse, that's okay. But that's because that's how he reads the passage, that there's a clear seeming allowance for
or
that.
Or maybe that felt okay to him.
Right.
For
or maybe
reason.
Because for halachic reasons, that's seen as a type of intercourse.
Right.
So the other stuff that we said, no, that's a problem. The Gemara never meant to allow this. So for example, when he talks about the husband kissing and looking at the wife's vagina, he says, well, that's obviously disgusting. And he actually says to kiss, like, you know, you're not supposed to eat disgusting things. So to kiss the wife's vagina is like putting a disgusting thing in your mouth. So that's forbidden because you're not allowed to, you know, lo tashaksu, consume disgusting things.
Right.
So, and that's coming from some objective assess. You know, he's asserting that that's objectively the case.
And what is so striking about this, I think, and what I liked about this listener question is, even though he didn't realize he was asking this, it's not just halachically why did they say it's usher, but what happens as a result of some of these conversations mm-hmm. is there's sort of a disgust of parts of the women's body, uh-huh. Or just a disgust of the body in general that we almost breathe it in. From the
right.
time we start learning as kids. And, you know, when you talk to women who maybe like having oral sex performed on them or, you know, or took a long time because they had so much shame about their vulvas and their vaginas and they felt so uncomfortable about those things. And you wonder where it comes from. And then you look at some of these sort of subtexts in the halacha and you kind of get it.
Right.
It's also interesting that this idea, this value judgment of something is objectively disgusting rather than just it's forbidden.
Mm.
I mean, you mentioned it
right.
with disgusting food as well.
Right.
Like, and I think that maybe this is my modern sensibility of that, like kashrut. Oh, well, you know, we don't really know why. There's no reason for kashrut.
Mm.
It's not necessarily that something is inherently bad, you know, but he's actually saying it is,
right.
it is actually gross.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. And what's interesting is, well, you know, that even those that endorse Ravid's position, because the Shulchan Aruch, I should say the Mechaber, right, Rav Yosef Cairo, who his sort of authority in the Shulchan Aruch, his half of the Shulchan Aruch is what Sephardim follow, he quotes the Ravid. Ramo will get to, Rav Moshe Israelis. But even posting that would follow that, there are some that say, well, look, the prohibition of eating disgusting things, it's clear that that's determined subjectively. There's no objective definition of what's disgusting. So, you know, if you don't find it disgusting, it's not a problem. And it's very important, this issue of the man, I mean, we're talking about kissing, which is what the Gemara talks about, but giving oral sex to his wife. I mean, but Sheva, you can tell us, right? Most women are able to achieve orgasm not through intercourse, but through, right, oral sex, right?
Right. So many women, so 30% of women can have an orgasm just from intercourse, penis and the vagina alone, where 70 to 80% of them can have an orgasm either from a hand or a mouth.
Right.
So it's a much higher percentage, and many, many women love oral sex. So it is sort of ironic, and many men love oral sex
right.
performed on them as well. So there is performing it on women, right? So there is a level of irony that is seen
right.
as so verboten. But you're saying the Shulchan Aruch doesn't.
Okay, but I do want to say one real important point here, which is what often gets lost is that there's a mitzvah here. Right, there's a mitzvah of ona, which is to the man to provide not just have intercourse with his wife, but sexual satisfaction to his wife. That clearly is a part of that mitzvah. So here, where for so many women, this is such an important part of their, you know, achieving orgasm, getting sexual satisfaction, it's so central to the mitzvah of ona, to say that we should be strict about this, you're not being strict, you're being very lenient and dismissive of the importance of the mitzvah of ona. It's not like, oh, we want to give people just, you know, more latitude. There are real Torah halachic values here in the couple having sexual satisfaction with one another, you know, the mitzvah of ona, the stability of the marriage, which I think really have to sort of dictate, you know, or guide the way that we think about these issues. So you
focused a lot on the oral sex piece. What about the ejaculating?
Okay, so I'll get to that. Let me just say a word, though, because that's obviously the next big thing, but I've been mentioning the Shulchan Aruch. So Shulchan Aruch, in one place, quotes these concerns of the Ravid. He actually has it in two passages. In another place, he doesn't mention it. But the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, he basically just quotes like Reb Yochanan's line, which is quoted by the Rambam, and says, whatever a man wants to do with his wife, he can do. He says, you can kiss any part of her body that you want. So presumably, why say that? He's presumably directly responding to the statement in the Talmud about kissing the vagina and saying it's totally okay. So certainly for Ashkenazim who follow the Ramah, you know, and often it's a funny story. They say, how do nowadays, you know, how from kids learn about sex is whatever. There's everything is on the internet. But in the olden days, in my days, the way your frum kid learned about sex was because they had an English kisser Shulchan Aruch. So you read the part, which is about what do you do after you daven the evening prayers and go to bed. There's a little section about sex. Okay, that's the part that's in Orach Chaim, and people would read that because it would be an English translation. But in the real place where the Shulchan Aruch talks about it, in Evin Ezer, in Laws of Marriage, he does not have those restrictions. And that's where the Ramah, which people don't get to, says a man can, you know, whatever, you can, man, husband and wife can do whatever they want, kiss whatever they want, and so on.
So why does this listener who wrote the question think that Shulchan Aruch is so negative?
Well, probably because they only read the passage, or, you know, most people really know of the passage in Orach Chaim, the part about the daily living, and not this passage. And because some people, the same way the Ravid pushed back against the Gemara, right now there are many rabbis who their, you know, values and their attitudes are similar to those of the Ravid around these issues of sex. And I've heard people try to argue that, oh no, the Ramah didn't really mean to give a full license. He meant within the limits that the Shulchan Aruch had said, you know, but he obviously agrees with all of the restrictions that are mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, you know, in the Mechaber's part, you know, Rav Yosef Kaira's part. So, but that's obviously, you know, many, many poskim say explicitly it's clear the Ramah is ruling that's total license, total permission. So that's where some of those issues come from.
So where does the whole spilling of seed issue come in?
So that's one which is for some, you know, much weightier than the earlier issues because of the Talmud's strong censure of the spilling of seed. But the interesting thing is that the primary passage where the Talmud talks about the problem about wasting seed and so on is about a context of masturbation. And it never directly talks about it in the context of marital sex. It's a shocker. It really doesn't. There's one passage where the Talmud speaks about the sin of Aaron Onan, you know, with Judah's sons, and it's the verse says that Onan, when he would come onto his wife, he would spill his seed on the ground. And then he was killed by God. Was he killed by God because of the sin of spilling his seed? Was he killed by God because he wasn't satisfying his brotherly obligation? You know, the idea like Yibum of having a child through his wife, that was really the problem, not the spilling of seed per se. But that is a case in the Torah where it's in a marital context. So that's the one thing the Talmud says you're not allowed to do, is that like withdrawal. But other than that, the Talmud never says, you know, that there's a problem of spilling of the seed in the marital context. And given the statement of Rabbi Yochanan, they can do whatever they want, it would seem pretty funny to think whatever they want doesn't really mean whatever they want. And, you know, and that one case in the Talmud about turning the table upside down is generally understood to mean anal intercourse. Well, with anal intercourse, the semen doesn't stay within the woman. The basic point is it's not spilling of semen. It's not wasting semen. It's semen that's, you know, ejaculated during marital sex is what is marital sex. So that is, again, how Ramah rules. Ramah says you can do any type of activity, even if it leads to ejaculation. And again, the Shulchan Aruch, interestingly, does not explicitly say one way or the other way about it. Most assume that he would not be okay with it, but he doesn't even explicitly rule about that.
So I think what's really important for us to communicate to both to the person who asked the question, but all the listeners here, is how critical this reading is to keeping him a happy sex life.
Right.
Because if you try to have a sex life where every night, every, you know, whatever, twice a week or three times a week, you kiss and hug and then put the penis in the vagina and call it a day, you're going to have some pretty unhappy people. And we are trying really hard to articulate a position which allow people to have a good and satisfying, fulfilling sex life for many, many years with each other. And so, you know, oral sex, using your hands on each other, you know, using the other 100 parts of the body, the breasts, the hair, the, you know, whatever kind of turns you on and you want to try should be allowed. And if somebody's petrified of ejaculating outside of the vagina, kind of ruins it.
Right. I mean, that's true about all the sense of variety. Here, the Talmud's metaphor about the eating is a good one. Like, I might love steak and potatoes, but if I had steak and potatoes every single night, I would go crazy. You know, we need variety. So, yeah.
I just want to push back a little bit. I'm surprised to find myself doing this, but there's many areas of Jewish observance where there's limits to things. So, right. I mean, couldn't you make the case that within a certain framework,
sure,
you can try whatever you want.
Sure, you know what those limits are called? They're called the laws of Nida. So,
okay, I mean, so there's timing limits, but there's also, you can't have sex with other people. You can't have other sex with other people watching you.
Right.
You can't do anything that makes the other person unhappy. Like, there are limits. They're just not draconian limits. It would be like the laws of kosher saying you can only eat broccoli or meat and potatoes.
Only not eat broccoli because of the bugs.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, right.
But,
sorry.
But it's, and we never hear people having hangups about like, oh, I think you have, you know, you're too indulgent in your food because you have, not, you know, so many different types of meals or whatever, you know. So it's, I mean, it's, I think that that metaphor in the Talmud is very helpful in terms of thinking. So you're absolutely right in terms of keeping things variety and interesting. And I think I've told this story before, but it bears retelling. Sometimes there are cases about different levels of desire, and it can go both ways, but I've dealt with a number of times where the man has a much higher level of desire than the woman, and a man once came to me and said, like, my marriage is breaking up because I want to have sex regularly, and my wife doesn't want to, and I said, well, would she be okay, like, you know, giving you manual sex or oral sex? And she said, yeah, she'd be fine with that, but, like, that's not allowed, right? So I said, no, actually, it is allowed, and he's like, you know, this amazing, like, light went off in his head, like, his eyes opened up. Anyway, he told me a few months later, he said, Rabbi, you saved my marriage, like, you know, and so there, it might not technically be the mitzvah of ona because it's about the man's satisfaction, but it's about the stability of the marriage and about a happy marriage, shalom bayis. And I mean, you know, so there's so many really critical halachic issues that we can't ignore.
I think this might be one of the most important messages and maybe one of the most important episodes that we have, because I think in the end this is a root of a lot of questions that people have in terms of developing their sex life. So I'm glad the listener wrote in the question.
And I will say it's not just me who is saying it. There's Rabbi Eliezer Melamed, who has put out this halachic series called Penine Halacha, and it's actually all available on the web, and it's in books, and it's a lot of it has been translated into English. He has a section on marital sort of laws, not laws of Nida, but between, you know, during when they're having sex, husband and wife. And he basically says all of this, like, yeah, it's all permitted, and even if man ejaculates, I mean, it's right there in the Shulchan Aruch. But if somebody wants a major halachic authority, you know, that's just one of many who's writing this and saying these things. So you have to just really get your facts straight and know what halachas and Jewish values you're compromising when you're being overly strict about these issues.
And it's really liberating, I think, and important for people to know that. So thank you so much for explaining. And now we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with Leah Gottfried from Student BYU.
Yeshivat Chovevei Torah is proud of its new class of 12 rabbis, which brings our total to 120 rabbis now serving Jewish communities. These modern Orthodox rabbis are making a difference in the United States, Europe, Australia, and Israel. If you think you have what it takes to be a Jewish leader and to be the next Chovevei Torah rabbi, come visit us and see what we're all about. For source sheets to accompany the Joy of Text episodes and for other great Torah, visit our Torah library at www.yctorah.org.
And we are here with Leah Gottfried, the co-writer, director, and one of the stars of Soon by You, a web series about dating in the modern Orthodox world. Thank you so much for joining us, Leah.
Thank you for having me. I'm such a huge fan of this podcast, I have to say, so it's really cool to be here.
So how did Soon by You come about? What was your inspiration for it?
So it was kind of a combination of a couple of things. A number of years ago, a mentor of mine introduced me to the Israeli show Srugim, which is about Orthodox Jews dating in Israel. And I remember just being floored by the fact that something like that could exist. And you know, it kind of just dawned on me, like, how did nobody create this yet here in New York? Because there's so much material to play with. And I started it as a short film. The first episode was a 15-minute short. And it won Best Short Film at the Washington Jewish Film Festival. And that's kind of the moment I knew that this was something big. And that's when I decided to expand it.
What's your background in film? How did you have the skills to produce this?
So I actually started out as an actress. It was my passion when I was really young. And I pursued that for a long time as a kid and as a teenager. And then as I got older, the sort of roles that were available were not necessarily something that I wanted to do. They didn't align with my values. And so I knew I couldn't give up acting.
But you have some good stories about sneaking out of school.
I do. Right? I do have great stories.
You have to say one of them.
Okay, sure. I mean, I was going to like a pretty orthodox high school in Los Angeles. And I was, you know, I had to hide what I was doing after school. But the cool part about that was that my mom is also a really creative person. And so she really supported me. And she would like sneak me out of school. And I would, you know, change out of my long uniform in the car. And we would go to auditions. I would be like auditioning for, you know, MTV projects and then go do like Chumash homework. It was pretty crazy. Kind of living in two worlds. Yeah. But anyway, so I, at a certain point, you know, there were Shabbat also got in the way a lot. Like I booked a role on a TV show and after the first couple of episodes, they switched the whole schedule around and I couldn't do it anymore. And that was a point for me where I realized that I wasn't going to give up acting and I wasn't going to give up my observance. So I decided to write and create my own roles. That's how I found myself, you know, as a creator and writer and storyteller.
Oh. In Seen by You, so the main female character is in a creative person as well.
Yeah.
And she goes on a date in the first episode. I'm not going to give too much away, but, and her reaction she gets is like, oh, why would you make art? Like, so I'm guessing that's based on some of your own experience.
Very much so. So not only on dates, sometimes that happens, but just growing up as a creative person in the Orthodox world, people don't understand it. You know, they're kind of baffled by it. They either like assume you're rebelling or they just think you don't understand. Like, you know, it's very puzzling. When I was in third grade, we had a project to write about what we wanted to be when we grew up. And I wrote that I wanted to be a movie star and it didn't go over so well. My teacher handed my paper back to me and she whited out my words.
Whoa.
I know.
Whoa.
I know. Every time I tell this story, it like re-traumatizes me.
It's like education at its best.
Exactly. Yes.
You know, this feminists talk about erasure, but this is like literal erasure.
Literally.
Right.
But I was very lucky to have a supportive parents and that's kind of what got me through.
So what do you think are the kind of the biggest challenges facing the singles on the Upper West Side, mm-hmm. which is really kind of what you're, I mean, I think that's probably singles in a lot of places. But.
Yeah. So I think what's challenging dating on the Upper West Side or as an Orthodox Jew is that you have all the normal dating problems, you know, that everybody goes through and it's kind of a tough world out there. And then on top of all of that, there's this added pressure because in the Orthodox world, there's so much pressure on people to settle down at a young age. And so that, you know, people see all their friends getting married and, you know, these friends kind of like disappear and you're sort of left. And there's this sense of just like being left behind, especially because so much of Orthodox life revolves around the family. And, you know, when you're single, it's like, where do you sort of fit in? So you're not with your family anymore and you don't have your own family yet. And so it's like this in-between stage. And the longer that stage lasts, I think the more difficult it is. And so a lot of times, you know, my friends will talk about how we go on first dates and you're sitting across from this guy and it's like you're immediately thinking like, can he be my husband? You know, like, and it's
no
this
pressure.
No pressure at all. Right. It's just this intense pressure right from the beginning.
Right. And there's also how sex plays in with all of mm-hmm. that, right? So on the one hand, if you're being observant, you don't have that same outlet. But on the other hand, maybe it frees from a certain complication that other people, you know, because mm-hmm. there's always the question about, you know, does sex get in the way of the relationship? Is there an expectation that you're supposed to have sex right away and mm-hmm. so on? So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, I think that's very different for a lot of different people. Like there certainly are people who are having sex. What's interesting, which I've been seeing a lot of lately, is that there's people who sort of put up a facade of, you know, being abstinent, and then they do their own thing in private, and we're expected to have that persona. But like you said, like as you get older, you know, it's harder to abstain, and I think a lot of people make their own decisions, but there's definitely an expectation to not be having sex.
Are you going to be dealing with that? I've noticed you haven't really dealt with it in the show at all, although in the last episode you had the part where an old friend goes to give her a hug,
right?
What the protagonist, and she pulls back, and he says, "Oh, is that a new thing?" And so they're clearly, she's showing a gay as a new thing, which I thought was fascinating as a twist, as opposed to the other way around.
Yeah, I think there's so much to play with in terms of Shomernagia and sex in general, like how different people change along their journeys. You can start off in one place and, you know, at a certain point decide that you have different boundaries. What I would love to explore is just how many different ways there are of observing this, or, you know, choosing not to observe it. The tricky thing with our show is that it's become almost like a family show. And so, like, every so often people will come up to me and say, "I love this show. It's so clean. I can watch with my family." And I'm like really happy that they have that. But at the same time, I would like to explore other issues. So it's a little bit tricky, but
I'm going to push back on that a little, because I feel like one of the problems is that nobody in the families talk about these things. And so when I'm out talking to parents, I'm always saying, use whatever opportunities you can to talk to your kids. So maybe you can think about doing an episode that pushes a little bit and even like print something or send out something or that lets people know this is an opportunity to talk to your kids about this issue. True.
I think it's so funny because it's so deeply ingrained in me even to not talk about these things if there are families around or children around. But like, we need to, you know, we can't like leave them in the dark. So I actually really like that idea.
Are all of the people involved also modern Orthodox?
Or? No, actually, not all of them are Jewish, the lead cast, actually. And
really?
Yeah. So Sarah Skur, who plays Sarah. I love like, your face right now.
My shock. You can't see it on the, but I'm like a total shock.
That's the reaction
because
we get.
She seems so from. That's so funny. That is now, that's really, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? Yes. She's an incredibly wonderful actress and person. What's so great about her is that people ask me, like, how can she do this if she's not religious or from, you know?
It's called acting.
It's acting. Thank you. And
just maybe you want to give a plug, right? You don't really see this show as only being interesting to modern Orthodox. You and I had a conversation about that. Mm-hmm. You were talking about how you think that shows like this can hit the more mainstream.
Yeah, I actually, the best comments I receive are from people who have never met a Jewish person in their life, and they watch this show and they love that it's still relatable to them, because at the end of the day, it's just about people searching for human connection. And that's something everybody can relate to. And it's more interesting because it's about modern Orthodox Jews, and they have all these, you know, nuances and fascinating. It's like a fascinating subculture that people like to learn about. But at the same time, they can understand these people on a human level. So I think it's actually, I'd love to expand it more. And one of our goals is to write a pilot based on the first episode, which we're doing right now, and pitch it to larger media platforms and networks and really get it on a much larger scale.
I know you're working on the fifth episode. Do you want to tell us a little about
that? Sure. We are working on episode 5, and we're in pre-production now, filming in October. And hopefully it'll come out soon after that, sometime in December. And I'm really excited about this episode. So episode 5, spoiler alert, episode 5 revolves around a wedding.
Which is going to be hysterical.
It's so fun to play with that because there's so much that goes on in a Jewish wedding, and we're just having so much fun writing it.
You said before, you talked about people who sort of put on a face that they're abstinent but are really doing whatever they're doing behind closed doors. Do you find that sexuality is something that your peers who are still single are talking about openly, or is it something that people really just keep to themselves?
Yeah, it depends on which circle. So I kind of have friends in different circles, and some friends won't talk about it at all. And they're still sort of in this mindset of almost pretending it doesn't exist until it does. And then there are some friends who talk about it really openly. And those are like my closer friends who talk about, you know, whether they are or aren't, and their experiences and or their struggles in abstaining. And so I think it really depends on which group of people you're interacting with.
Is there a correlation between where they place themselves in the Orthodox spectrum or not necessarily?
So I think there definitely is a correlation. Like my friends who wouldn't consider themselves modern Orthodox just they're just regular sort of Orthodox, they probably wouldn't talk about it openly, or they'll be embarrassed to talk about it. It's kind of a taboo subject. And then my friends who are more modern Orthodox will talk about it more openly. And that's how I identify myself. So, like, I will have conversations with my friends about sex. And
so I haven't seen all the episodes, but I'm wondering if, you know, sometimes shows like this, you know, it's an opportunity to explore other social issues. Mm-hmm. And there's a show that just came out on, I think it's Netflix, the which is called Atypical. You know, I have two kids mm-hmm. who are on the spectrum, and it's about this. So it's about this teenage kid and about him starting to date or trying to date and so on, you know, and how to, so, you know, that's like an interesting area, the LGBT issue, right? Are those issues that you have explored or that you're thinking of exploring?
So far we have not explored much of that, but we're definitely thinking about exploring more of it. And I think with each episode, we go a little bit, like, we've been wanting to do this, talk about Shomanagia for a while. And so we kind of introduced it in episode 4, and I'd love to explore it more. And with a lot of the issues you mentioned, especially LGBTQ, because a lot of people are asking about that. And I think it's so important to talk about and just acknowledge that it exists. Mm-hmm. It's almost a responsibility that I feel sometimes, because so many people are watching it. And by ignoring certain things, it's almost like we're making a statement by doing that. So I don't want to do that.
Do you ever feel like when you're putting something out there that explores so, you know, intimately in a way, this very specific slice of the Jewish community, for a general audience, do you feel like a responsibility to be protective in any way of that people will interpret things in a certain way?
Right. Yeah, like she's not going to have a scene where somebody's taking their underwear to the rabbi.
Yeah, so it's something that's always on our mind, you know, because on one hand, you know, we want to portray our community authentically and positively, but those things don't always go together, because our community, really? Our community is not always positive. There are lots of negative things about it. And I think pretending that it's perfect is just harmful to everybody. We have our issues and we have our problems, and we're never going to solve them if we don't talk about them. So I think it's really important to do both. And that's something we always keep in mind as we write. But it's very tricky because, you know, a lot of people who are watching, maybe this is their first, you know, foray into the Orthodox world. They've never experienced it before. And so if they come right in and it's, you know, negative, they'll have that sort of assumption that it's always like that. Or if they come right in and it's super positive, they'll assume it's like that, or just assume we're making stuff up.
What would you say to, like, what can the rest of the Orthodox community do to make life better for singles?
Wow. That's a really good question.
You should answer that in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Okay. I think the first thing is to just see them and interact with them first on a human level. And so not automatically say, like, singles, married people, and, like, have this divide, which I think happens a lot. And I also think what could be really helpful is to respect people based on other things. So there's a lot of respect that comes with being married, which I find a little bit funny. Like, as soon as you're married, you sort of gain this respect, and it's a little bit bizarre.
It's a lot bizarre.
It's a lot. Thank you.
Well, you're now a real person.
Exactly.
Right. Grown up.
So I think
you're 21, you're not supporting yourself, but you're married, as opposed to 30-year-olds who's totally self-supporting. Yeah.
Partner a law firm, but you're not married. You're not yet a grown up.
I'm going to give a plug for Jofa right now. Jofa's run two now salons for singles, like younger singles, older singles, and now we're going to do one in New Jersey for the parents of singles. And we're putting out a bill of rights now for single people in the community.
Awesome. I love that.
So
great.
Well, we really love the show.
Thank
you for coming.
Thank you so much.
So you can watch it on YouTube.
Search Soon By You. You'll find it. We have a channel with all the episodes and lots of behind the scenes stuff and interviews and fun things like that. You can follow us on Facebook. We'll post updates regularly about future episodes.
And if people want to give money,
please, if you like the show and support it and think that it's important, please donate. We have a donation page set up on our website, soonbyyou.com, and all donations are tax deductible. Woohoo! Okay. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. Now we have to take a quick break for a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with a new take on The Final Word.
What was the last Shabbat table conversation that got you excited? Who was the last person to change your mind? When was the last time a Facebook post just didn't feel like the right medium for expressing your thoughts and feelings? If you have answers to these questions, and I know you do, then it's time to write for Jofa's blog at the Jewish Week. At Jofa's blog, we believe in catalyzing change in the Jewish community by giving voice to its members and inspiring conversations one blog post at a time. Bring your voice into the collective conversation and submit your piece today. For more information, email shira@jofa.org.
So those of you who are regular listeners might have noticed that last year we had a final word where both Dov and I came up with a word that we thought wasn't used that much and sort of defined it. So we have the new idea, which is, I think, a great idea to let you, the listener, have the final word, because we get so many moving letters, and this is above and beyond the questions, comments, letters, ideas, and we really wanted to be able to share some of those for you. So we're going to end every episode this year with your final word, and we're going to read comments from you, and we love hearing them, so please keep sending them in.
Okay, so we got this note from a listener. Thank you for creating a safe space for observant Jews to have explicit conversations. On the eve of my 50th birthday, I have been reflecting on my changing attitudes and experiences of sex over the past year, and you have been a huge part of it. The topics that you have covered without fear or embarrassment, including vibrators, phone sex, and the fullness and variety that can be appropriate in a marital sexual relationship, because God and tradition want us to have a sexually satisfying marriage to achieve the halachic and spiritual goal of true partnership, are disarming years of embarrassment and repression. By allowing me to explore my own psyche, you have enabled me to work toward a more honest and fulfilling sexual relationship with my husband of 20 plus years. He has always asked me to be honest with him in the past, and I am just now bringing myself to discuss certain topics, and we are enjoying ourselves more. I just bought a vibrator as a 50th birthday gift to myself, which I never, in all caps, would have contemplated without Batsheva's encouragement through the podcast. Keep up the great work.
So you can't see, but I'm kind of tearing up. Thank you for writing in. It means so much for us to hear those things from you.
Yeah, I love hearing it. And just shows, you know, people, some people feel like, why are you discussing these private matters? And I think you just have to hear a letter like that to understand how important this conversation is. So thank you so much.
I also think it speaks so much to the importance and the power that media can have to show people what's possible and to open up discussions. On that note, it's time to wrap up this episode. Thank you so much for being here, and thank you so much for listening. The Joy of Text is sponsored by Jofa, Yeshiva Chovevei Torah, and Maze Women's Health. If you have questions or comments you'd like to share with us, you can submit them anonymously at www.thejoyoftext.org. Thank you to Leah Gottfried for joining us on this episode. This episode was recorded by Mike Hurst and produced and edited by me, Rebecca Hunu-Friedman. You can tune into the show on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or with any podcast app. Thanks so much for listening.